It is very important to remember now what I told you yesterday, because I mentioned yesterday the basic principles of spiritual life, what you call the theorem of the entire structure of our life's aspirations, from which follow many consequences. And these consequences are the activities of life, the hopes of mankind, the troubles of people, the tensions of every individual. All blessed things follow automatically from the nature of life, as I tried to explain yesterday. The point that I tried to bring out yesterday was that all action is a tendency towards expansion of being. There is no such thing as activity, really speaking. It is only an effort of being to expand itself. So the false distinction apparently made between being and doing has to be overcome. There is no such thing as a distinction between being and doing. There is no doing, it is only being moving within itself for its own sake, for its own expansion and intensity. Your activities in life are the attempts you make to come in contact with external realities for the purpose of expansion of your finite being. This is the essence of what I mentioned yesterday. So far, everything looks fine. It looks philosophical. But there are dangerous aspects of this movement of consciousness in its relationship with other persons and things. Our relationship with people and things outside is like a double-edged sword. It can cut both ways. It is like fire, which can cook your food or burn your house. It is like water, without which you cannot live, but which can destroy you also if you get drowned in it. So is relationship with persons and things. It is a wonderful thing philosophically to conceive, but dangerous when it is misconceived and misapplied. Yesterday I gave you only the philosophical side, the metaphysical, or rather the spiritual aspect of our relationship with persons and things outside, by which what we came to know was that activities are also relationships, and all relationships are movements of being in its universal expanse, or self-realization of itself. Now today, we may dwell upon the other aspect of this feature of human life called relationship, namely the erroneous movements of relationship, not merely the grand philosophical aspects of it. When human relationship becomes philosophical, it becomes karma yoga. When it becomes unphilosophical, it becomes passion, desire, a source of bondage. The same movement, as I mentioned, the same fire, the same water, the same sword, same knife, can work both ways. When your relationship with things outside is philosophically motivated and intelligently directed with a conscious purpose present in the mind always, never missed at any moment of time, it becomes yoga. All activity is yoga. All relationship is good relationship. everything is fine and grand and beautiful in this majestic creation of God. But in this very majestic creation of God also is Satan. There is Mara. This is a peculiar thing. We cannot understand how error corrupts him in a grand structure of God's creation. What is evil? Though there is no such thing as evil, ultimately, a person caught up in a peculiar movement of consciousness cannot realize that there is an erroneous movement of consciousness. We cannot detect mistakes when we get identified with the mistakes. A judge cannot examine a case if he is himself involved in the case. He must be a witness of the case, then he can pass a correct judgment. If we ourselves are involved in the mistake, we cannot detect the mistake. We cannot know what mistakes we are committing because we have identified our consciousness with the mistake itself. We have become the embodiment of blunder, mistake. We are embodiments of mistake. How can we know that we are committing mistake? Who is to know this? Because we ourselves are that. Therefore, the Guru is necessary. You cannot know your mistakes. When you do the wrong, who will tell you that you are doing the wrong? You cannot know it because you have identified yourself with it. Sometimes Guru's grace, sometimes God's blessings come and enlighten you, illumine you. Your meritorious deeds done in the previous lives come and awaken you. When everything goes wrong, the intellect can detect that something is wrong. But if the intellect itself is going wrong, who will detect the mistake? That is our pitiable condition. So again I emphasize the need for a guru. When you are in the wrong path, who will find out that you are on the wrong path? A guru is necessary. Now, when consciousness establishes relationship with other persons and things, which you call social relationship, normally speaking, it can go on the right path or it can go on the wrong path. So when it goes on the right path, it is called humanitarianism, humanism, charitableness, philanthropy, karma yoga, and so many things. All beautiful things, which everybody holds in high esteem. But when it goes on the wrong path, it is called egoism. It is called passion and anger and greed. Your relationship with other persons and things can be exploited for your individual pleasure, satisfaction, not necessarily for the good of other people. You can serve people only for your own satisfaction also. Though outwardly it may look that you are a philanthropic person. Even good deeds can be misapplied for bad purposes. The devil can come in the garb of a great saint. All these are not impossible things. The spiritual path is called the razor's edge. For this very reason, in the Upanishad, the word churasadhara is used, razor's edge, which means two things. The spiritual path is the razor's edge in two ways. It is sharp and cutting. as dangerous as the edge of a razor. If you go a little wrong, it will cut your nose. It is handling 6000 volt live wire or even a higher voltage. You are working with high voltage tension wires. You are a good engineer, you shall be careful, but you are a little blunderous, you know the consequences. You are touching high voltage tension wires. That is spiritual path, high voltage wire. It can spotlight your whole life with the blaze of illumination, or it can burn you to ashes. It can do both things. One of the admirers of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa once came to him, "You touched Vivekananda, why don't you touch me also?" You gave him cosmic consciousness by touch. What mistake have I committed? Why not I will also be touched? Sri Ramakrishna said nothing, he kept quiet. But this man went on insisting and asking questions again and again, "Why don't you touch me? Why don't you touch me?" One day Sri Ramakrishna said, "You fellow, you want me to touch you, come here, I will touch you, you will become ashes just now." "Oh," he said, he ran away from there. "Don't touch me. Don't touch me, don't touch me." The idea is that there is no use merely being touched by a high tension wire unless you are a good conductor of that force. If you are a good conductor, you will pass that force through you. You will receive it properly. Otherwise, it will be like passing 6000 volts through a small filament of an electric bulb which can bear only 220 volts. It will simply fuse in a second. Nothing will be left there. It will burst. Our scriptures tell us that nobody should try to practice yoga unless there is a proper preparation already made by way of discipline. In Raja Yoga of Patanjali, the term yama and niyama are used. In Vedantic terminology, sadhana, chatushtaya and such other terms are used, details of which are given in yoga texts and philosophical treatises. When our relationship with things gets twisted, it returns to us like a boomerang instead of expanding itself into universality. And this twisting of consciousness wrongly, making it turn back upon us, is karma, not karma yoga. When it has a tendency to expand into universality, it becomes karma yoga. When it turns back upon us to bind us, that becomes karma, action. Why should certain relationships turn back upon us, and why should certain others expand into universality? The reason is simple. The motive behind your relationship is an important factor. Why do you have any relationship with people and things? What is the intention behind? Why do you speak to people? Why do you want to see anybody? Why do you want to do any work in this world? Put a question to yourself. Let answers come from the deepest conscience of your being. Why do I do so many things from morning to evening? What is the purpose? Why do I serve people? Why do I talk to persons? Why do I do anything at all? It is difficult to get answers to these questions. You yourself will not be able to answer easily these questions because you may have wrong answers given by a bad friend who is sitting inside. We have a good friend and also a bad friend. Both are inside us. Sometimes the wrong friend speaks and tells us, "My dear friend, what you are doing is very nice. Go ahead." He wants you to go and fall into the pit. But sometimes, at other times, the good friend speaks, "No, this is not all right. Your motive is not pure. Intention is not pious. And what you are deeply thinking in the subconscious is different from what it appears on your conscious level." Occasionally, the bad friend catches hold of the throat of the good friend. You say, "Keep quiet, you don't speak. When I speak, you don't speak." And the good friend, "Keep quiet, all right, you do whatever you like." Then we hear the voice of the bad friend only. And then we start shouting the glory of our own individual personalities and start announcing our importance and asserting the rectitude of everything that we do and finding fault with everybody else in the world. If anything is wrong, it is somebody else's. It is not mine. I have not done any mistake. All mistake is done by somebody else. That person is wrong. Atman is heresy. He is selfish. I am unselfish. I am good. That person is bad. This is our activity directed by the advice given by the bad friend. But the good friend, when he gets the upper hand, speaks, "No. If there is any mistake, it is your mistake. Because you have not been able to adjust your mind and consciousness properly with the setup of things. The setup of things is nothing but a particular stage of the evolution of the world. And you are a part of the world. Therefore, at any given level or stage of evolution, you are obliged to follow the law or rule of that particular stage of evolution. Yesterday, I was speaking to a friend and mentioning this point, that when you go to Rome, be a Roman, is an old saying, which means to say that you cannot apply the law of a realm to which you do not really belong and in which you are not placed. When you are in the physical level, the physical laws apply to you. When you are in the social level, the social laws apply to you. When you are in the psychological level, the psychological laws apply to you. When you are in the spiritual level, the spiritual laws apply. But you cannot apply the law of one realm to another realm while you are not placed harmoniously in that realm. Otherwise, there will be misplacement of values and the chaos will take place. In the basic principles of Indian culture especially, this necessity to adjust oneself with a particular level of life is insisted upon. We use the famous complex term known as dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Material values, economic values, and vital values, ethical values, and spiritual values are all important values. You cannot say, "I am a lover of God and I care a hoot for this world of matter." Such a talk and such a feeling is misplaced. There are misplaced religionists and enthusiastic seekers who do not understand themselves properly, who talk like that. "I care only for God and not for man and world." There are other people who say, I don't care for God, I care for only for man and the world. Both these are on the wrong path. Because the God that you are seeking is not a God outside the world. And the world whom you are seeing, which you are seeing, and the people in whose midst you are staying, are not outside God. Neither people and world are outside God, nor God is outside the world and people. So it is easy to make this simple mistake of bifurcating the visible from the invisible and vice versa. The reason behind erroneous movements of mind as desires, passions, anger, greed, etc. The reason behind this movement is a misplaced emphasis on certain aspects of life, ignoring certain other equally important aspects of life. We do not know where we stand. We have a wrong assessment of our own knowledge, power, capacity, etc. If in a war, the general of the army has no proper understanding of the power of his own men and no comparative knowledge of the power of his enemy, there is a great doubt whether he will win victory in the war. It is no use simply going ahead into the battlefield. I shall win victory in the war and come. Merely because you are rushing into the battlefield, it does not mean that you will win victory. Because you have to take into consideration many, many aspects of the battle into which you are entering. Firstly, the powers of your own self, your own associates, your equipment, etc., and the corresponding powers of the opposite side. You are facing the whole world in your spiritual attempts. Whose power is greater, the world's power or your power? If you have even the slightest feeling that the world is more powerful than I, and I cannot face it, then your duty would be to rise to the level of the world and then face it, rather than go headlong and then get defeated by the world, which is not any virtue. Many of the seekers of truth fail. All sadhakas are good, basically speaking, but they are not always very wise, because a good person need not be a wise person. He may make mistakes in spite of his goodness. So, though the intention is pious and heart is good and pure, the intelligence is lacking. And so, he receives a kickback from the world, the result of which is either a frustration of feeling, a reversion to the original mode of living, a sense of hopelessness of all pursuits, and coming to a conclusion that perhaps nothing is worthwhile and no good is going to come out from this attempt. There is nothing wrong with the attempt. You have wrongly manifested that attempt. Viveka or understanding is supposed to be the first prerequisite of spiritual pursuits. Again I come to the point of a guru. Who can have understanding in this world? Who can have such wisdom? We are all muddle-headed people, confused and confounded. We get irritated, upset and disturbed by sights and sounds and events that take place around us. Even if something happens in America, we can be disturbed here, though we are not concerned with it. because of a peculiar psychological feeling that arises in us, again by misplaced values. Understanding of a pure nature with all the pros and cons duly considered, consequences also duly weighed, is very essential. If I do this thing or take such a particular step, what will be the consequence? There are some people who think they will go to the forest and meditate tomorrow onwards. I don't want to see anybody's face. I will search for God in the jungles. Very good idea. Nobody can say it is wrong. But what are the consequences? You go tomorrow to the jungle and sit there. What consequence follows? God comes tomorrow immediately. Well, God may come or God may not come. If he comes, it will be for a reason, and if he doesn't come, it will also be for a reason. And that reason should be clear before you. Because wholehearted devotion to God is unthinkable. Nobody's heart can be wholly turned to God. Though we may sometimes think that it is so, again we are making a mistake of not taking into consideration our subconscious mind. Consciously we may be thinking of God wholly perhaps. Just know, who is thinking of anything but God? But yet, it is not true that the entire personality of yours is steeped in God even now. Notwithstanding the fact that you are hearing about God and thinking about Him consciously. Because your personality is not merely the conscious level. Psychologists tell you that your conscious personality is the smallest part of your personality. The larger part is buried deep. So, unless and until the larger part, which is deeper, subconscious or unconscious, whatever you may call it, is also brought into the conscious level, which is the work of psychoanalysis, unless that is brought up and made a part of the conscious activity, your whole personality cannot be said to be involved in any activity. None of your activities is connected with the whole of your being. Always a partial aspect of our being works in any one of our activities. Whole of us never go into action. Very rarely we act wholly. But unless the whole thing comes out, the whole thing will not come to you also. God is the whole and you are asking for the whole and the whole of you must go there. It is the whole asking for the whole, not only the fragment of your being. When we mistake a fragment for the whole, passions arise in our minds. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, in one of the verses, Bhagavan Sri Krishna says that the lowest kind of knowledge is that which regards a finite for the infinite. Finite as the infinite. Mistakes one thing for everything. That is called attachment. When you think that one thing is everything, that is called attachment. And that intensified becomes passion. And that obstructed becomes anger. That defeated becomes frustration. All things follow from this basic mistake of regarding one thing as everything. For a miser, money is everything. But money is one thing. And how he regards one thing as everything? Very strange. Fame or power is also one thing. But there are people who regard that as everything. That is a mistake. There are many other objects in the world which can attract our attention wholly, as if they are all things. But they are not all things. So, Kama Krodha Lobha, as they call. Intense desire or passion, anger, greed, etc. follow from the basic mistake of regarding one thing as everything. In a very short form, precisely it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter. Sri Krishna says that this is the grossest and the lowest and the worst form of knowledge, where you regard one thing as everything and cling to it. This is called attachment. But higher form of knowledge is that where you do not regard one thing as everything, but you regard other things equally important as this thing and one thing as related to every other thing also. Everything is equally good. One thing is connected with other things. You become a more expanded social personality. But highest kind of knowledge is that which does not even relate one thing with another thing, but regards existence as an indivisible being. There is no question of relating one thing with another thing, because such things do not exist. So the lowest knowledge is finitude of consciousness, clinging to one thing only as if it is all things. The higher knowledge is the relativity of things, where you regard all things into consideration, of course, bring them all into consideration in your thoughts and actions and feelings. But yet, the multiplicity consciousness persists. You regard one thing as different from another thing. But highest knowledge is the indivisibility of consciousness, where it has no need to move at all for any purpose. Everything that it needs is here and now. Thus, what I tell you today is a sort of commentary on what I told yesterday, which again would emphasize the difficulty of following the spiritual path. Rare indeed is a person who can contain this idea in the mind, maintain it for a long time, make it a part of his or her personality, and live according to this idea. Very difficult. It is a wonder indeed. The Upanishad as well as the Bhagavad Gita tells that all this is a miracle. That you can hear such things is a miracle. That you can appreciate such things is a miracle. That you will be able to stick to this principle is a miracle. That you will be able to practice it is a greater miracle. Ascharyavad pashyati kashchidena. Ascharyavad vadati tathaiva janya. Ascharyavad chayanam anyashranoti. Shrutvabhyenam veda najeva kashchit. But he has given a last warning. With all this hearing, finally you will find it is difficult, very, very difficult. It won't enter the head. I understood. Sorry. It is not going deep. Why is it not going deep? Because the proper effort is not made. You have to brood upon it every day. Your understanding has to sink into feeling. Our difficulty is that feelings are going one way and the understanding is going another way. You understand everything, but you cannot feel it. Your feelings are moving in another direction altogether. Meditation is the act of fusing the understanding with feeling, of getting understanding absorbed into the feeling. The union of the understanding with feeling is called intuition. Hari Om Tat Sat. Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai.